Boy, the Lumberjacks had it. They just couldn't secure it.
Loose! Kensmill's got it! They've got a timeout. They don't use it! Bane! Yes! The Lumberjacks have done it! The Lumberjacks apparently have done it. They'll look a little longer, but this is going to be the biggest win in program history.
But this is Bane. He's looking up at the clock. Is the ball out of his hand when that clock goes to zero?
Oh, my goodness,
yes.
It is. Nathan Bane, this is your life.
Wow.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Wednesday, November 27, 2019. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Ion College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. I am sick, so this is the way I'm going to sound. Apologies, Matt Norlander is here with me, and I know I promised Tuesday night on Twitter that we would open Wednesday morning's podcast with Dayton, because Dayton is very clearly about to win the 2020 NCAA tournament, and Obi Toppin suddenly is now in the MJ LeBron debate about who is basketball's GOAT. But after I tweeted that, something crazy happened. Stephen F. Austin beat top-ranked Duke inside Cameron Indoor Stadium. Final score, Stephen F. Austin 85, number one Duke 83 in OT. The Lumberjacks from Nacogdoches, they were 28-point underdogs, but still won on a coast-to-coast layup for a player named Nathan Bane, whose family lost everything in the Bahamas earlier this year. None of this makes sense. It was the first non-league home loss for Duke since February 26, 2000. So the Blue Devils are now 150-1 in their past 151 non-league games. That's nuts. Stephen F. Austin was coming off of a 12-point loss to Rutgers. They were ranked 263rd at KenPom when the game tipped off, but they won inside Cameron Indoor. So shouts to Kyle Keller. Shouts to Nathan Bane. Shouts to the original Stephen F. Austin, who died in 1836. He was known as the father of Texas. Now he's the daddy of Duke. Norlander, what in the world happened Tuesday night inside Cameron Indoor?
The daddy of Duke. Shouts to Thomas Walkup, by the way, who got this going years ago. I'll remind listeners, Stephen F. Austin has a couple of NCAA tournament wins to its name. Parrish, you sound like you were in the Stephen F. Austin cheering section inside Cameron Indoor last night. This is the greatness of college basketball right here. I'm on like 5 hours of sleep, was jacked up, totally jacked up after this game. A lot of has been made about this being the first loss in non-conference play for Duke since 2000. I get all that. I'll remind you that Bootsy Thornton, Eric Barkley, Laver Postel played for St. John's in 2000. That was a legit team. To me, the more stunning stat is that we're at almost 37 years. 37 years, Parrish, since Duke lost at home against a mid-major team. That was Wagner in the first week of 1983. We're talking more than, 37,000 days or something like that. So, so many places we can go with this. First of all, the Stephen F. Austin team, Kyle Keller said after the game, that the team was, they were sick.
They're like me.
Yeah, exactly.
And do you want to know who else they were like?
Who?
Stephen F. Austin himself.
Did he
you die? Don't know this.
Okay, what did he die from?
Pneumonia at the age of 43.
Gosh. Poor Stevie. The F stands for friggin', by the way.
Do you know what city was named after Stephen F. Austin?
I'm going to say Austin, Texas.
Correct. But did you know it, or did you just put it together when I said it?
I put it together when you said it.
Of course.
Pretty awesome.
I read his entire Wikipedia page. I know everything about Stephen F. Austin. Never married, never had children, left everything to his sister, Emily. I think her name was Emily.
Well, shouts to Emily Austin. Okay.
Shouts to Emily Austin. She's dead too now, by the way.
I would presume so. All right. I jotted down things as this all played out in the aftermath last night, specifically for this podcast. 28-point underdogs. I saw ESPN mention, I don't know if a listener can get this because I have not seen the dangling thread here. 28-point underdogs, the largest upset, the biggest upset in college basketball I didn't see in at least 15 years. I saw in 15 years. So I'd like to know if it was 15 or 16 years ago, what team was a bigger underdog than 28 points that won? It was weird that there was that 15-point cutoff. That stat was provided by the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook, so maybe that's all the data they have. But obviously, this is one of the biggest upsets in the history of college basketball. I don't care that it's in November. You're winning at Duke, number one ranked team, Mike Krzyzewski, Blue Devils, all that goes into that, the non-conference home win streak, and you enter the day, you know, on the bottom half of the 250s, 260s in KenPom. You jump up 42 spots after that. And Nathan Bain, to get shouts to Eric Collins, by the way, at the top of the podcast. That was his call on the play-by-play. Credit to the ACC Network and the Fox Sports Regional affiliates. I got it on the YES Network at my house in Connecticut. This game was actually shockingly available around the country, but I don't know what television contract went into place where it was on like 13 different kinds of networks depending on where you live. Shouts to Eric Collins for that. Nathan Bain, to have – it was – although it's a very different play, it was Kihei Clark-like in that it's a scramble for a ball at the end of a game. The clock's winding down. Parrish, I would love to know your reaction as it played out in real time, because when it was first of all, the play in general, like multiple loose balls, Stephen F. Austin winds up with it. I thought he was going to just, when it was playing out, my brain was flashing as this was going, I thought he was going to try and take a tough runner about from the foul line and that it was going to go long and we'd be going to double OT. Instead, he has the composure, the mental wherewithal to get it in with 1/10 of a second to go. He even said afterward, I thought I was going to get fouled. So what were you thinking when that play played out? How did you think it was going to go?
Well, okay, so we're both watching it. By the way, overtime was 4-2.
And
which is just, oh my just God, barely better. Please tell me you were watching the Arkansas-Georgia Tech game the night before.
Yeah, which didn't have quite as absurd of an ending, but Parrish, were those the only points that were scored in that Arkansas game, the bank?
Yes. One of my close friends is an Arkansas graduate, so, I mean, I was watching it anyway, but we're in a group text, and he was like, he was insane. Yes, it was. Okay, they go to overtime, and it's 0-0 for the first minute, second minute, third minute, fourth minute. And then finally, Georgia Tech scores to make it 2-0 in overtime. And then Arkansas banks in a three at the buzzer, a bad shot, banked in three at the buzzer to win that overtime 3-2. It happened in the final second. I submit, I can't prove this, I'm just assuming it's true. First time in history that a team has won a game in the first overtime after going scoreless for the first 4:59. Of that overtime. I mean, it has to be, crazy, right? So this was slightly what we watched with Duke and Stephen F. Austin. Slightly better than that, but like barely better than that. Okay, so Duke gets an offensive rebound. Score tied. And shot clock's off. And you just assume, I mean, Trey Jones got the ball. We see this scenario all the time in basketball.
All the time.
You're going to take a shot late in the shot clock, maybe at the buzzer. I mean, late in the game clock, maybe at the buzzer. But one of two things is going to happen. You're going to win the game, or you're going to go to an extra period, a double overtime in this case. The idea that it's then a turnover, and then a loose ball scramble, and then somebody comes out of it and is racing down the court by himself, like a horse running away with the Kentucky Derby. He's just running by himself. I mean, you asked me what was my reaction. I tweeted it. Holy shit. What?
Yes.
What in the world? Because sometimes if you're watching a basketball game and Stephen F. Austin's, you know, got the ball, you go, oh, wow, man, they're the ones running down the clock. Mm-hmm. They might really do this. But in the situation we were in with 7 seconds to go, Stephen F. Austin winning this game in the first overtime is unimaginable. It's not even on your radar. Stephen F. Austin winning the game in regulation on your radar because they were up. Stephen F. Austin winning the game in overtime at certain points on your radar because it's tied. Stephen F. Austin winning the game when there's 7 seconds left in overtime, not even on your radar because Trey Jones has got the ball. I mean, supposed to be the most reliable point guard in the country. Mm. He's got the ball. Duke's either going to win this and get out of there, or we're going to more likely they're going to miss a shot because that's what they do, yeah, and we're going to go to a second overtime. And then loose ball, pitched out. was just racing down the court by himself. And then that was my reaction.
Nathan Bain, man.
I apologize for the language, but my reaction was, holy shit.
No, don't apologize. Are you kidding me? I need worse language. I need more profanities. Are you kidding me?
Oh, I got plenty more. You want my full reaction? Was, holy shit, this is going to really rough up the top 25. I'm always thinking as it relates to the top 25 and one. So, it was just like, what? And then you learn the Nate, and like, unless you are really like a diehard, you don't know who Nathan Bain is.
Right.
And then afterwards, you learn the Nathan Bain story. He's from the Bahamas. His family lost everything. There's a GoFundMe set up by the Stephen F. Austin Compliance Department, or at least being monitored by the Compliance Department. It went from $2,000 to, as of this morning, $16,000. So if you ever want to raise money, just like beat Duke and then start a GoFundMe. People are fired up about that. The whole thing was awesome. And I'm so happy for Kyle. Like, I've known Kyle for a long, long time, since he was an assistant. I guess it was at Oklahoma State. And to see him have that moment and those kids have that moment, man, they'll never forget that. You know, winning that game in that way at Cameron Indoor, inside Cameron Indoor, you'll have that forever. What a great, great, great thing.
Yeah, the Nathan Bain stuff, it was under 2,000 when the game started, and this was a GoFundMe that had been started, I believe, in September. And the glorious power of social media, okay? You mentioned 16,000. As we record this, it's more than 20,000. By the time you are listening to this podcast, it could be north of 30,000. This is a kid from the Bahamas. House was destroyed. Father at a church. The church was destroyed. And, yeah, I mean, your note on just beat Duke at Cameron. Get a lot done. You're right. You very much can. And it's an incredible testament to I think people discovering the story and wanting to help, but also the fact that it beat Duke. This turned into like the mega sports event of the week, essentially. Just insane. And you mentioned Kyle Keller. A couple notes on him. He mentioned it afterward. You know, he lost his mother this summer. It had been a rough offseason for the Stephen F. Austin program in general. The cameras caught his wife in absolute tears. The visuals coming out of that were unbelievable. And I will give a big shout, Axum, to the Stephen F. Austin faithful, because they brought a legitimate horde inside Cameron Indoor Stadium. For a road team to take up that much behind the bench of a section was extremely impressive. Kyle Keller also, just a little bit more backstory, I believe that he was supposed to be on the plane that tragically crashed for Oklahoma State back in 2001, but he had winded up needing to switch at the last minute because Eddie Sutton had wanted him to be on the other plane, I think for a scouting purpose or for a recruiting purpose. He's got actually a pretty fascinating backstory. He took over Stephen F. Austin on the heels of Brad Underwood getting that program to levels obviously he had never been before. And now, you know, it's taken a little time, but they are still a legitimate mid-major program. So everything surrounding Stephen F. Austin that led up to this moment, Parrish, just some of the best of what sports has to offer, because they've had real tragedy touch that program, some tough times. One of the assistants has been battling cancer. CJ Moore over at The Athletic wrote a quality feature on that about a month back or so. Before we get to other elements of the game and Duke in general, I just wanted to, you know, really just take a moment here to let listeners know just how much had been touching that program from a negative standpoint, and yet karma just whiplashes back in the best of possible ways and gives us an upset that I just don't see, barring another 16-1, and even that might not qualify. UMBC was a smaller point spread favorite against Virginia than Stephen F. Austin on the road at number one ranked Duke. This is going to be probably almost certainly the most shocking upset of the season.
I mean, I made the point on Twitter last night. I mean, it's November 27th, all right? November 27th. The season started on November 5th. It's November 27th. And so far, everything I'm about to tell you is true about this college basketball season. The preseason number one lost 2 days ago to the team projected to finish 14th in the ACC. That was Michigan State losing to Virginia Tech. And that seemed like it was going to be the biggest story of the week. When Michigan State loses the opener to Kentucky, Kentucky moves to number one and then subsequently loses as a 25-point favorite to Evansville. So we've got the preseason number one losing to the team predicted to finish 14th in the ACC. The second week number one losing at home as a 25-point favorite to Evansville, which, by the way, if you watch what Evansville done since then, they just lose every game. I think they went on a three-game losing streak immediately after beating Kentucky.
Yep.
Okay. So then after Kentucky loses, Duke becomes number one. And now we have Duke losing inside Cameron Indoor as a 28-point favorite to a Stephen F. Austin team that was coming off of a 12-point loss to Rutgers. I mean, that is college basketball this season. Jay Billis made the point multiple times last night during Virginia Tech Dayton, and I think most of us are going to be on board with him on this. There's not going to be a number one team for 7 straight weeks or 11 straight weeks. Nobody seems to be, outside of maybe Louisville. I mean, I don't know. Louisville looks good. But nobody seems to be an obvious, like, best team in the country. But even then, like, you know, anytime this stuff happens, you get some tweets from people going, well, maybe you guys don't know how to rank teams. Oh, okay, like, whatever. Like, the number one team losing as a 25-point favorite, followed by the number one team losing as a 28-point favorite. I don't care how much of a basketball analyst you are. You cannot see that coming.
You can't. I mean, how about this? Okay. And credit to our CBS Sports research team for this. In the AP poll era, there's only been one season when 4 different teams held the number one ranking before New Year's Day. Not even in the first month. We're going to get to the first, 4 or 5 weeks of the season, and we're going to have 4 different teams hold the number one ranking. We are so far and away beyond anything we've seen before. I saw Jeff Borzello write for ESPN.com, our buddy, shouts to Jeff, I know you're listening, that there had never been more than one team lose in the month of November as the number one team in college basketball, meaning we haven't had 2 number ones fall in the first three weeks in the season. Well, we have that. We've had it happen 3 times, and now we're going to get a 4th different one. The year that this happened, when there were 4 different teams that held number one before New Year's Day, was 1987-88. That was Syracuse, North Carolina, Kentucky, and Arizona all held the number one ranking in the AP Top 25 by the start of the new year. And Arizona was the 4th team that year to get the number one. That happened on December 21st, 1987. So it's basically 3 weeks ahead of the previous record, if and when it happens on Monday. It's just bonkers. Again, congrats to Kyle Keller. Wade Mason was the assistant I mentioned who's battling cancer, liver cancer. He's still been active. This story is truly incredible. And Stephen F. Austin has a shot to come out of the Southland and represent itself in the NCAA tournament yet again. If that happens, obviously the Lumberjacks are going to be a pretty chic upset pick no matter where they are seated. Again, if they can get there. Kyle Keller mentioned this in the postgame last night, speaking about playing in one big league, how great a win like this is, the kind of schedules you have to go up against, how hard it is for a season-long battle for these coaches. They get these games, these bye games. Side note, SFA got $85,000 to go to Duke and beat them inside Cameron Indoor Stadium. I got all sorts of stuff here, but by the way, Parrish. Dan Bonner was on the color call of this game. He was also on the color call of one of the more memorable upsets of the past 15 years in college basketball. Do you remember what it was? You cannot be serious with that shot.
I do know that. Oh, it's Northern Iowa.
Correct. He was at the sideline for CBS when Farouk Manesh beat number one Kansas in the second round. And obviously you remember this, and I think some listeners will remember it. But when Northern Iowa defeated Kansas and Dan Bonner on the sideline there as he was on Tuesday night, that was considered like top 10 level all-time NCAA tournament upset because – though Northern Iowa had a great seed out of the Missouri Valley, Kansas was the overwhelmingly considered the best team in that specific tournament. And for them to lose and not even get out of the first weekend was fairly shocking. How about a trivia time for you, Parrish? You ready?
Bring it.
Because I know you got some for me. Okay. So much has been made about Duke. 150 straight non-con wins, and now it finally ends. By the way, that St. John's team, was a top 10 team at the end of that season with Bootsy Thornton and Eric Barkley, et cetera, et cetera. So that was a really good team that did this. All right, so Duke's 150 is over. That means there's got to be a new team that has the longest non-conference home win streak. Do you know, have you seen who it is? Who's your guess?
I know that Tennessee has the longest home winning streak right now at 30 games.
Interesting. Okay, so the longest specific home winning streak. Well, the answer is not Tennessee. So non-conference only, obviously. So this team has lost at home more recently than Tennessee, but when it lost at home, it lost against a conference opponent. I'll try and narrow it down for you. First of all, I think if I gave you – it's gettable, but I think if I gave you 40 guesses, I don't think you'd get it. So it's a weird combination of the two. It's a team out of the Big East.
A team out of the Big East – I'm going to say it's – I feel like Villanova got romped at some point.
They got romped last season.
Right.
Shouts to
Furman. I'm going to go Xavier.
It's not Xavier, but by the way, this just popped to mind. Furman, purple. Stephen F. Austin, purple. Evansville, purple. If you want to take down a big-time program on the road and be a mid-major, you might want to have purple in your scheme. All those three teams wear the violet there. Not Xavier. One more – not Xavier, but kind of in that geographic region.
Okay, so not Xavier, but in that geographic region. Let me look at the teams here. See if I can just pick them out. Not Xavier, but it's Butler.
It is the Butler Bulldogs. That's right. Credit to David Woods, the beat writer there. He's the one who tweeted this out afterward. I was surprised to see it. But, yes, Butler Butler has the streak now. 55 straight non-conference home wins for the Bulldogs. And, you know, obviously the math is – the math – Parrish, what's the math on that, by the way? Can you tell me roughly off the top of your head, the streak compared to Duke's 55 to 150?
55 to 150 is going to be roughly – it's one third of
all right,
it.
There we go. There we go. We had it. Just absolutely just I couldn't love this story more, man. Just the composure of Bane to get the layup. Recent other upsets, nearly as big. We had Gardner Webb, 26 underdog against Kentucky when it was coached by Billy Gillespie. In 2015, I do remember this game randomly. Western Illinois, 25.5-point underdogs at Wisconsin and won 69-67. Wofford, of course, Wofford GP, 25-point dogs at Carolina with Fletcher McGee and co. That was not last season's Wofford team. That was in 2017. They won 79-75. And then obviously Evansville earlier this season, 25-point dogs. They won 67-64 at Kentucky. What other thoughts you got on this game, be it Duke, be it big picture? Because, you know, as we sit here now, I think one – you don't have to go here, but the last thing I was going to leave off with this is there's this sentiment that college basketball – you know, Pomeroy tweeted, there are no good teams. There's a sentiment now that college basketball at the top is weak, that, you know, no single dominant team, et cetera, et cetera. What are your takeaways remaining from this game, and do you agree or disagree with the idea that the season is going to be, quote-unquote, doomed – to not have like one, two, or three teams that are clearly so much better than the rest of the group?
Yeah. I mean, I do agree with that, and I believe that from the jump. I mean, let's just go back to the nearly consensus preseason number one, which might not even have a first round draft pick. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's Michigan State. Mm-hmm. I've made this point on previous podcasts when the nearly consensus preseason number one might not have a first round draft pick. That's not normal. Top-ranked teams are supposed to have NBA players, and I'm not sure Michigan – I mean, listen, Cassius could end up there. Xavier Tillman could end up there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you do a mock draft, you probably don't include them in the first round. And so once you could at least acknowledge that, then you can, I think, acknowledge that nobody on paper looks overwhelming. Except, again, maybe Dayton. Maybe Dayton is going to turn be number one and be forever. But, you know, Michigan State is flawed. Kentucky's flawed. Duke is flawed. So, listen, I don't think there's no great – like, somebody's going to be great. College basketball has a remarkable ability of presenting you with a great team. I don't know who it's going to be, but somebody will show themselves to at least have a great body of work. But on paper, is anybody 2015 Kentucky, 2012 Kentucky, 2009 Carolina. It doesn't look like it.
And I mean, listen, we are obviously, as I stated before, we're in uncharted territory. College basketball has never had a November like this where you've had number one teams losing. And it's not that they're losing all to other ranked teams. Again, Evansville, Stephen F. Austin kind of indicates that. But when we get to, I promise you, when we get to March, we are going to have the teams that are projected to be on one seeds and two seeds. When you compare those teams to what teams are on the 7 line, even the 5 line, the 9 line, they're going to be better. So if you were to compare this season to a season ago, 4 seasons ago, 15 seasons ago, might not that upper line be as dominant or as good? Yeah, that's possible. But I promise you that when we get to the NCAA tournament, the perception on the one seeds are going to be, all right, it's been kind of a crazy year. There might be a few wacky losses, but those teams are clearly better. Although I will say this, Parrish, if you've got a situation in which all these top 10 level teams keep losing games, I don't know if seed line bumps are in play, because if everyone's taking these bad losses, they're all going to wash each other out there. But hey. I love this sport. This is awesome. College football can't give us this. NBA can't give us this. Baseball can't give us this. Hockey can't give us this. You just don't see this kind of upset happen in really any other sport during the regular season than college basketball. That's a function of having so many teams. But credit to Stephen F. Austin for giving us an all-timer. And for Duke, I'm not overly concerned, Parrish. You'll recall, I wasn't as big on the Blue Devils in the preseason. I still maintain that. I picked them to finish fourth in the ACC. I'll stick with that. I think that's where they're going to land. Trey Jones still doesn't have a jump shot. Vernon Carey had a bad game. You saw what happened. Matthew Hurt played better. But, if you're Duke, you've got some concerns. There's no doubt about it. The shooting just is not there. But I'll give a credit to Stephen F. Austin for doing what it wanted to do. And it's the number one rated turnover team in the country. So defensively, it did what it wanted to do and pulled out a huge win.
Trivia time.
Okay.
The last time, as we noted, that Duke lost a non-league home game was February 26, 2000. The number one song on the Billboard Hot 100 chart on that date was I Knew I Loved You. By whom?
Okay, I was about to say, the Billboard Top 100 had I Knew I Loved You?
I Knew I Loved You.
So, obviously, I love that you're going music trivia time on me here. I would know the artist, right?
I did not.
You don't? Okay, because I'm wondering if the hook of the song is different than the title. Is it an artist or a band?
I don't know.
Talking about?
I mean, it's a band, but I swear to God, when I looked this up randomly last night, I was like, who is that? Who is that and what song? I didn't even listen to the song. If I listened to it right now, I might recognize it. I did not recognize the name of the song or the name of the band.
And this is definitely Billboard Top Hot 100. It's not like some weird, you didn't accidentally click on the wrong genre or anything like that?
Dude, don't ask me if I know how to research trivia time.
Okay, listen.
That's insulting.
First of all, listeners can't see this, but we are looking at each other over FaceTime. So Parrish just leaned in right against the camera when he said, "Dude, I knew I loved you." I like you say 2000. I'm thinking Waiting for Tonight, Jennifer Lopez. Like that was that thong song era, but so I don't have it. You're gonna have to.
Yeah, Savage Garden.
Oh yeah, you don't know Savage Garden?
I don't know Savage Garden.
Chicken Cherry Cola. What?
I know Randy Savage, and I know Soundgarden.
No, oh. Savage Garden had some hits, man. They had some hits in the 90s. They had anytime I wanted to do like a chicken cherry cola. You don't know that song?
100%.
Oh, it's been forever. They also did the I Knew I Loved You before.
I never know that song.
Yeah, you would know it if you heard it. First of all, it actually still kind of slaps. It actually still, like, that song, I think that's called I Want You. I think that's what that's, when that song starts, it's actually got a solid groove to it. They had another even huger hit, but Savage Garden. Oh, I know. Oh, I can hear it now. I hear it in my head. I knew I loved you before I met you. Something like that. Anyway.
How did you know you loved somebody before you met them?
That's the Savage Garden way. That's the Savage Garden way.
In fairness, I never met like a lot of people on Instagram that I feel like I could love.
Okay. I will give credit.
Maybe I'm my own personal set. Evans guard.
Nothing. All right. I'll give credit to Martin Rickman, who also, so I tweeted out 13,000, I think I said it was 37,000 days, I'm in 37 years, but 13,473 days between Duke losing at home to mid-majors inside Cameron Indoor Stadium. He tweeted out, first of all, Mike Krzyzewski was 35 when that happened. So, and he also tweeted out the number one song in 1983. I'll give you the group. I wonder if you can guess the song. So the group that had the number one song in 1983 was Hall & Oates. Which Hall & Oates song do you think was number one on the charts on January 6th, 1983?
Hall & Oates. Were they Waiting for a Girl Like You or something like that?
That is Foreigner.
Well, did
yeah. Oh, yeah, that's sing it, Parrish.
No, I will not. I wouldn't sing it under normal circumstances. I certainly can't sing it when I can barely talk. Mm-hmm. Hall & Oates. Your Kiss?
What? No. Oh, here she comes.
She's a man-eater.
There we go. That was the number one song. I never sing before. And this is, woo! And the number one movie, which I've never seen, was Tootsie. So shouts to Martin Rickman.
Tootsie?
Yeah, I've never seen Tootsie. What? That's not egregious. You've seen Tootsie?
Sure.
No, there's no shot.
There's a man dressing up as a woman, right?
I think that might Dustin Hoffman, something like that. That might be it. Yeah, I've never seen the movie, so I can't remember. But all anyway, right. You got any more trivia times related to this game, or should we get to? Should we 30 minutes into this podcast get to the topic we actually thought we were going to be leading?
Let's. I do. I'll answer both those questions. Yes, I have more trivia time, but yes, let's move on.
Okay.
The Maui Invitational has been weird. Last year, the top-ranked teams in Maui was Duke and Gonzaga. They actually advanced to the title game. Made total sense. But that will not be the case this year. That's because Virginia Tech upset Michigan State on Monday, which was wild. And then Dayton beat the same Virginia Tech team by 27 points on Tuesday. That was wilder. So Dayton is now 5-0 with a 19-point win over Georgia and a 27-point win over Virginia Tech. And for what it's worth, the Flyers are now the highest-rated KenPom team in the Atlantic 10. They've jumped 32 spots in 22 days, and I have them number nine in Wednesday morning's top 25-1. So shouts to Roosevelt Chapman, shouts to Don May, shouts to Henry Finkel, and shouts to Obi Toppin, who was spectacular. He got 24 points, 8 rebounds in the win over Virginia Tech. He's now averaging 24 points, 8 rebounds, while shooting 72.3% from the field and 53.3% from three-point range. He has the best player efficiency rating in the nation. It's 43.39. Norlander, are you ready to pick Dayton over Kansas in the Maui title game?
I'll tell you that after the break.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Dayton, Kansas, Maui title game. I got thoughts on all this stuff. Okay. First of all, I'm kind of annoyed that the title game is no longer the last game of the day. I have a certain comfort. Like, I guess the most recent one was in Notre Dame, did it 2 years ago, but now Maui and ESPN have decided to put it on like around dinner time, which is fine, but I don't know. I think that's a little bit weird. Parrish, I'm legitimately about ready to pick Dayton to win and beat Kansas because, one, the season's just feeling like that overall. Kansas is on the doorstep of maybe getting that number one ranking. Louisville's obviously ahead of them. So it would make only perfect sense if Kansas were to lose. Obi Toppin has been terrific. Now, I don't want to shortchange his teammates, though, because Dayton on the whole has looked, in Maui alone, like legitimate top 10 level college basketball team. They're 23rd at KenPom right now with a 5-0 record. I will cop to having not seen them beat Indiana State, Charleston Southern, or Nebraska, Omaha, the three games they played prior to getting out on the islands. But they looked awesome against Georgia, held Anthony Edwards, who, oh, by the way, put up the best single half performance in the history of the Maui Invitational with what he was able to do, albeit, yes, in a loss against Michigan State. But Anthony Edwards was out of his mind good, and yet Dayton shut him down entirely. And then Dayton takes a Virginia Tech team off to only its second 6-0 start in the past 35-plus years, rolling, looking great, and demolishes him. Virginia Tech held to a season-low 62 points. Dayton wins by 20-27 overall. Toppin's been outstanding. I mean, I can't say enough good things about how strong he's been, but I think Rodney Chatman has played quite well. Trey Landers, by the way, the Dayton-Virginia Tech game, as the only Norlander on this podcast, I will point out that Dayton-Virginia Tech featured two Landers. You had Trey Landers of Dayton and then Landers Nolly of Virginia Tech. So shout out to Landers around the world. Really love this team. Like, they could have it. We'll see if they can beat Kansas and F it. I'm picking them to win. I'm picking them to win, getting a second Maui Invitational. If they do that, they've still got games against St. Mary's in the non-con, Colorado. Those are the two most notable. Even if they split there, Dayton could be setting itself up to be like one of its best teams ever if Toppin maintains this. It's absurd how good he's looked. I think I saw you tweet, Parrish, that like he, it was either what, first team All-American or like player of the year. Like, that's not a joke. If you have been able to watch Dayton the past 2 days and you get to see him again against Kansas, and I'll be actually super fascinated to see how Self and his staff scheme for Toppin, because Kansas has been a quality defensive team the entire season, and I include the Champions Classic because it was horrendous with 28 turnovers, but otherwise Kansas has been pretty sweet. I'll be interested to see how Toppin plays there. He's had five straight games of at least 20 points. Only a few players in America have done that this season. I am loving the Flyers, and I'm loving Obi-Wan Toppin. He's been fantastic.
If you just looked at the box scores, you would go, oh, wow, Dayton looks good. But actually watching them was more impressive than the box scores, more impressive than the final score. They looked great. Like when I said they look great, they looked great. They're getting good shots. They're making good shots. Toppin is unreal. Like, really does look like, and I don't want to get caught up in the moment, but it looks like a candidate for player of the year. I don't want to say he's the best player in the country. He might be. I don't know that. He looked like it yesterday. He might be.
Yeah.
And I mean, that Dayton team, I'll give credit to, I mean, I want to remind you, you're speaking right now to the MC of the Atlantic 10 Media Day. So
are you gonna try and take a little bit of credit for this?
No, I'm gonna give some people credit. I'm trying to be less
okay.
I'm trying to be less me. Okay. Let me be less me. Preparing remarks for the A10 Media Day, and I would be talking about VCU and Davidson, because those are the two teams that I had ranked in the preseason top 25 and won, and those were the two teams that were projected to finish first and second in the A10. Every time, give credit, shouts to Drew Dickerson from the Atlantic 10. He'd say, hey, don't forget Dayton. Make sure you mention Dayton. Make sure you keep Dayton in that conversation, because there were people in that league who thought that Dayton could be a real factor, not only in the A10, but nationally. And now here they are, 5-0, heading into a game against Kansas. I think they're going to win the game, too. I promise you this, if they play like they played against Virginia Tech, they will win the game.
They will win. Yes, you are correct. They will absolutely win the game. Now, obviously, that's a tough task. And when you get three games in 3 days, no matter the opponent, this is the – it's – I love this for college hoops in November, and coaches in equal parts love and hate it. You don't get this the rest of the season. Because even the NCAA tournament, you get a day break between games. Here you got three games in a row, high-quality competition. If Dayton wins, it'll be its first 6-0 start since 2008-2009 season under Brian Gregory. They started 8-0 that season, finished 27-8, and made the NCAA tournament as an 11 seed.
It's like watching them over the past couple of days has been really, really impressive. And the Obi Toppin story, I'm assuming people will latch onto it. This is the type of, you know what, it's like the Adam Morrison week. I mean, it really is so far. Like you and I knew Obi Toppin. I'm the MC of the A-10 media then. But most people didn't know who Obi Toppin was. And I saw people tweeting about Obi Toppin last night who I promise you didn't know who Obi Toppin was yesterday morning. And so if he goes big against Kansas again tonight, it will be very much like the Adam Morrison Maui performance. And then he's got the name, Obi Toppin. I mean, like, get out of here. That's terrific. So, and he's a legitimate NBA prospect. And I'll tell you one thing that's going to help him. I was texting with somebody last night about this. As I mentioned, he's got the highest player efficiency rating in the country. And that doesn't always mean everything, but it is something. Last year, Zion had the highest player efficiency rating. Like, of all time. It was ridiculous.
It was of all time, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But number two, which would have been the best of the past decade, if not for Zion, so it was the second best of the past decade, was Brandon Clark. Mm-hmm. And yet, he went 21st in the draft. He slipped all the way to 21. And then the Grizzlies traded up to get him. But the reason he slipped to 21 is that despite all the productivity, he's a 6'9 center, whatever he is, right? And people just have questions about that. Undersized center who didn't shoot threes in college. And so people question that. But, like, guess who's got the highest player efficiency rating among NBA rookies right now? Brandon Clark, same dude.
Yep.
And so everybody now knows that they messed up by letting him slip. And you got Obi Toppin, who was, like, his story's crazy. 6'2 as a high school junior. Okay? 6'5 as a high school senior. Now he's 6'9. So he was a guard three years ago. He was a redshirt, I believe, for academic reasons. According to 24/7 Sports, a zero-star recruit. Like, not completely off the radar.
Whoa.
Like, you can find his name. You can find his name.
Wow.
But he's got no stars. Zero.
Wow.
So zero-star recruit who was 6'2 just a few years ago. Now he's 6'9, knocking down threes. He's tough. He's smart. He looks like a lottery pick. It's a terrific story.
I did not realize that he did not. Now, that is in part because, listen, 353 teams, thousands of recruits in a given year, obviously. The recruiting services that track all of these players, you are inevitably, it's the Ja Morant thing, right? You are just going to have guys that wind up being good college players who might just slip through the screens and get in. But I didn't realize that Toppin was one of those guys at all. And he wasn't, like, he was solid last season, but he wasn't a top 10 freshman in America. He was good quality at the A-10 level, and the amount of growth and immediate impact he's been able to make, you're right. It can be Adam Morrison, like, weirdly, he's competing with Anthony Edwards, who has not been able to win a game. And again, Dayton was able to keep Edwards just completely in check in that first one. But you got to tune in for the Anthony Edwards show as well, Parrish, because I don't know if you saw all of it, but the second half is all you needed to see. I mean, the stuff that Edwards was doing was, it was absurd. So it's been a great, Maui always delivers, and it's been great to see Dayton do what it's been able to do. And even if Georgia's not going to get the wins it needs to get, Edwards put on a display on Tuesday that, in my mind, just vaulted him that much further into the real number one overall pick discussion for 2020. We'll see if George is going to be able to win with him, big picture. And they got Rayshon Hammonds. They got some good talent there. But Maui has been awesome, and I'm expecting, hopefully, a Wednesday that can be nearly as entertaining as the first 2 days gave us.
Zion Williamson was the National Player of the Year in the 2018-19 season. Now Obi Toppin might be the front runner. Guess where he went to high school?
I mean, that's an absurd question. Guess where Obi Toppin? Don't tell me they went to the same school. That didn't happen.
They did not. But okay. You know where he went?
Don't tell me he went to your high school. I know he didn't go to my high school.
No, he did not go to my. Obi Toppin, just throwing it out there. He went to Mount Zion.
Okay. That's in Ohio, so there we go. Right? That's Mount Zion in Ohio?
I don't know where Mount Zion is.
Yeah, it's got to be. Yeah, right?
No. It has to be.
It doesn't have to be. You said he was zero stars. He's playing at Dayton. I'm guessing he was not coming from Utah or Texas.
Maryland. It's in Maryland.
Well, what the hell's going on right now?
I don't understand. He's from Brooklyn, went to Mount Zion, and now he's balling out at Dayton. Got a brother at Rhode Island.
Yes, I did. Yes, I'm aware of that. Yes. There we go. Okay.
The Toppin family's running the A-10 right now.
They're the Tops.
That's terrible.
Oh, behave.
That's worse.
No, that's actually miserable. Anyway.
So we're both taking Dayton over Kansas.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Considering how we're both terrible at picking games, and then
this one doesn't even count. Hey, we got a Friday, and we have a Friday podcast coming. For everyone that's enjoying this ridiculousness on Thanksgiving Eve on your travels, hopefully the traffic isn't brutal, the flights aren't brutal. I know there's bad weather across the country here. We're going to have you covered on Friday, and our official picks that we will log, those are coming then. So we're going to pick this game, both going to take Dayton to win, but it's not going on the official tally.
All right, before we get out of here, fun game scheduled for Wednesday night's opening round of the Battle for Atlantis. Number 11, Oregon against number 13, Seton Hall. We talked about this earlier in the week. That's about as good of a opening round matchup as you could get. Miles Powell, Peyton Pritchard. Oregon, I believe, is a 1.5-point favorite, but total coin flip situation. This will be – I want to make sure I've got the schedule right because we could really have a fun doubleheader, even if they're in totally different events in college basketball today. So you get Dayton and Kansas at 4 o'clock. And, yeah, then you get Oregon and Seton Hall at 4 o'clock Central, I should say. Then you get Oregon Seton Hall at 8:30 Central. So that's a fun night of college basketball.
That's great day. Loaded day. Yes, when you get the start of Battle for Atlantis and the conclusion of Maui, those are Seton Hall, Oregon, and Dayton, Kansas are the two best games of the day by far. You've got some other mildly intriguing ones elsewhere. But, yes, these are the two best. And for – I mean, Maui is the granddaddy of all of the early season tournaments, but this season, Battle for Atlantis definitely has it. When you get a Seton Hall, Oregon in a quarterfinal game, that's fantastic. Elsewhere is Gonzaga, Southern Miss in the bottom half of the bracket. The top half has Cole Anthony going up against Kyra Lewis. That's North Carolina, Alabama, and then Michigan State plays Iowa State. So the tournament overall in Battle for Atlantis is plenty intriguing. Whatever comes about, we'll obviously get to on the Friday podcast. But for these purposes today, right now, Seton Hall, Oregon is the one worth looking ahead to because Seton Hall only lost by 3 at home to Michigan State. We've had some dramatic games. I still think that's the best game of the season so far, considering the quality of the teams involved and the way that it was played, also in a true road environment for the Spartans. This is the second best challenge by far Seton Hall's had. Its other wins are Wagner, Stony Brook, at St. Louis, which is no small thing, but they were able to win that easily. And then they're coming off a win against the Florida A&M Rattlers on Saturday there. I want to see if Oregon is able to match Seton Hall. Seton Hall is a tough team. They're a tall team, long team. I think Seton Hall is better than Oregon. Oregon has yet to lose. Its toughest game so far has been against Memphis. That was in Portland. James Wiseman famously played in that game. I believe that's the last game Wiseman played in, if memory serves correctly.
Correct.
But they've got good talent, obviously Oregon does, but I think Seton Hall's a better team. I'm expecting Seton Hall to win, but this, it happened in Maui, it'll happen in Battle for Atlantis, happens everywhere, but this kind of tournament specifically, if you can get this win and you get to a title game situation, if you can get out of Maui as the champ, or out of the Battle for Atlantis as the champs, you just do your resume absolute wonders. And credit to John Gassaway of ESPN.com, he had a piece earlier this week that showed that champions of November tournaments make the NCAA tournament like 80% of the time in the past 10 to 12 years. That's, you know, an outrageously good clip. Now, some of that is obviously if you're going to win that, not just that you're a good team, but usually you're going to be from a power conference. So you're going to have more slack to give in terms of losses. But if you're a fan of any team and you've won any kind of November tournament, just know that the odds are overwhelmingly in your favor, that the floor will not fall through on your team and you're going to wind up making the NCAA tournament.
One point I would make about Oregon, they're still without five-star freshman Infali Dante.
Yes.
And, you know, their preseason ranking was largely based, is a lot like Memphis. It was based on the recruiting class. Whereas Memphis's recruiting class, and I know Oregon beat Memphis, Memphis' recruiting class is performing. Like, James Wiseman in the three games he played was awesome. Precious Achiuwa has been terrific. DJ Jeffries has been terrific. The Oregon freshmen aren't doing much at all. And so they've got, you know, transfers, and Peyton Pritchard is obviously experienced. But, the number next to Oregon's name in the preseason AP poll was largely based on, man, they enrolled a top five recruiting class. The top five recruiting class is not really doing anything right now. And so who knows? It's a 40-minute basketball game. I thought Michigan State would handle Virginia Tech no problem. Whatever. but I'd pick Seton Hall to win this game if I had to pick somebody to win the game.
Yeah, I think Seton Hall is just a little bit better right now. And you're right. Once Infali Dante is able to return, he's a fun player. And Oregon will be that much more entertaining. I didn't think C.J. Walker would be this much of a non-factor. C.J. Walker was the kind of prospect we both saw multiple times when he was playing on the grassroots circuit. He just seemed to be the kind of player that when he got to college, not that he'd be like a top 10 guy in terms of freshman overall like viability and valuableness, if you will, but I didn't think that he would be this. I mean, he's not getting on the floor a lot, has taken 6 shots total so far. So I don't know if there's, you know, a lingering injury issue with him or not. But you know, as we speak to Oregon Seton Hall, specifically in this game, you were reading my mind there, Parrish. I just didn't think that he'd be as less of a factor as he's been overall. But
so you think about Oregon's top 5 recruiting class.
Yeah.
Okay, like the 2 best prospects in it, Infali Dante and C.J. Walker. Infali Dante's not playing. C.J. Walker is barely playing and doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And yes, I'm with you. I'm shocked by that. There was one game at Peach Jam 2 summers ago where he just destroyed everybody. And I was like, my God.
Yeah.
Like, at this point, he was a 4-star prospect. I was like, how is that guy not one of the best prospects in the country? He's amazing. Mm-hmm. And he was consistently good there. He eventually, the recruiting analyst moved him up to a 5-star. He had offers from, like, if he wanted to be a part of the Memphis recruiting class, he could have been. He was offered. But he ends up at Oregon. He's just not doing anything. I'm shocked by that. Chandler Lawson, who is from Memphis, went to Oregon. You know, he's averaging 5 points a game, but he's only averaging 5 points a game. So I just think usually if you got a top 5 recruiting class, those guys are going to perform. And the Oregon recruiting class, in Infali Dante not playing, the rest of the guys really not playing well.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I'm excited. This kind of day is awesome. For those that aren't traveling, I hope that you're able to watch as much college hoops as you can. This whole week is fantastic, but I think the Wednesday before Thanksgiving is my favorite day by far because of the quality of basketball, the amount we have on there. Thanksgiving, in addition to football, which we know you'll be watching, actually does offer some games as well. The most intriguing one is Davidson-Marquette. That's a 6:30 tip in the Orlando tournament, only because Davidson, you know, the A-10's been awesome so far this season, and we'll get to that on a podcast in the near future, I would think, as long as the league can keep it up. But weirdly enough, for as good as the A-10 has been, Davidson was thought by plenty to be the best team in the league. It's lost 3 games, fell to Auburn, lost at Charlotte, and lost to Wake Forest. And now it's in like a real urgent situation on Thanksgiving when it has to play a Marquette team that's got questions of its own. So that's actually a relatively urgent game that you might want to tune into on Thanksgiving. But yeah, we'll be back on Friday with plenty to talk about. And we thank you for helping, you know, bring us into your lives here. So it's a pleasure. And GP, you got everything settled on the home front for Thanksgiving. I know this is your favorite holiday.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I just wake. I what? Here's what I'll do. I'll wake up on Thursday morning.
Get some Taco Bell.
I'll look at my beautiful wife and I'll say, "All right, what time do we have to leave the house and where are we going?" And she'll tell me, and then I'll do my best to be where I need to be. I don't really get involved in the planning. I don't have time for that. I walked in the other night. After radio, I guess it was Monday night, and we've got a Friendsgiving going on. I didn't know nothing about it.
Oh, my God.
I don't even have any friends, so I don't even think about it. I don't even have friends. So it never even occurs to me to have a Friendsgiving. So it was really just my wife's friends.
Yeah.
But, like, I just walked right in. I don't know what's going on. I don't have any idea what's going on in my own life.
What?
All I do is watch Obi Toppin.
We'll be watching more Obi Toppin. Yeah, the Friendsgiving thing is like it's a recent development. It's just having your friends over and having like a bigger meal than normal. I got nothing against it, but like this has become like a cultural thing in the past decade.
Yeah, I didn't need it. I was busy on Monday night. You know, I was tired. I didn't need to see my wife's friends. Not all of them at the same time. I don't mind when one or two of them are here, but I don't need to see everybody. Because then you feel obligated. Like, I really wanted to do what I do almost every night, which is take my boys upstairs and watch basketball.
Hey, I'll tell you.
Or in summer baseball.
I hear you.
And then I had to have conversations with people I barely know. I don't like doing that.
I'm going to give Parrish a quick piece of props here. And please do not do your 5-minute rant again. But I will say, like 7 years ago on the podcast, maybe 6 years ago, we've had a lot of new listeners in the past, 6 months, 1 year, 2 year, 3 years. Borzello tweeted this at you. I remember recording the episode. Parrish went on a legendary, 9-minute rant about how he hates turkey. Thanksgiving is terrible. He should have Taco Bell. And now people think they're being all bold and brave on social media by declaring that turkey sucks. This is the in vogue chic take. You were well ahead of the curve, well ahead of the pack on all of this. You've been vocal about your disdain for turkey. I'm a pescatarian, so turkey sucks as much as chicken. They all suck as far as I'm concerned. I'm gonna just bite into a big hunk of salmon on Thursday, and I can't wait. Stuffed salmon, bring it on, right? But you were anti-turkey long ago, and it seems the world has caught up with you.
I'm anti-turkey. I don't hate turkey. I don't think turkey sucks. Like, if there's nothing else to eat and there's some turkey there, I'll be like, fine, I'll have turkey. Like, I hate black olives. I don't hate turkey. Same. I just – if I were ranking things, and you're talking not only to the MC of the Atlantic and Media Day, but also the most recognized ranker of basketball teams in the world, college at least. I mean, who else wakes up every day and does this stupid stuff? That feel like it's only me. And so if I were ranking things the way I rank basketball teams, I'm not sure turkey would not even sniff the top 25 and one. It's just – it's an inferior product. And the idea that we spend we dedicate a holiday every year, and that holiday is built around get with people you love and eat all day long. Just get with family and just eat. Maybe not even get with people you love. Just get with people that you happen to be related to one way or another and eat all day long.
There's a window.
And then the centerpiece of that is turkey based on tradition. It's crazy to me when there's so many other things available. I tweeted chicken because chicken's amazing. But it could be anything. Pizza.
Yeah.
Like if you said, hey, we're gonna get together tomorrow and eat pizza all day. I'd be like, that sounds awesome. I'll do that. Hey, we're going to get together tomorrow and we're going to eat chicken nuggets all day. I'd be like, I like chicken nuggets. Do we have honey mustard? Yeah, we have honey mustard. Cool. Let's do that. That sounds great. We're going to get together tomorrow and eat steak. You want to? Would you like to have a filet for breakfast and a filet for dinner? Yeah, that sounds great. Let's do that. But we're gonna get together all day and eat turkey. Like, what are we doing? It's silly. Like I've pointed out many, many times, if there was this great demand for turkey in real life, there'd be a Turkey Bell. But there's not. There's a Taco Bell. You know why? Because people love tacos. They're not a Turkey Bell. You can't find a Turkey Bell anywhere. Like if there was a great demand for turkey in real life, there'd be a turkey filet. There's not a turkey filet. There's Chick-fil-A. You know why? Chick-fil-A, people love chicken.
No turkey No turkey hut, right?
There actually is a turkey hut.
What?
I know. I didn't know it either.
I
discovered it. It's in Houston. There's a turkey leg hut in Houston, Texas. Look it up. Okay? But here's my point. So, because somebody thought they were proving something to me on Twitter. Don't ever think you're proving something to me on Twitter. You're not. All right. You might tell me something I didn't know, but you are not proving a point to me ever. Okay. So this guy was like, GP, there is a turkey, because I made the same point. If there's a Pizza Hut, but there's not a turkey hut, this guy goes, GP, there actually is a turkey hut. I was like, shit. I didn't know. So I look it up, and there is a turkey hut. It's in Houston, but that's it. It's one. And Gus's world famous fried chicken started in Mason, Tennessee, and then it was so amazing that they have them everywhere now. Everything starts somewhere, and then if it's amazing, they put them everywhere. Well, Turkey Hut's still just sitting in Houston, right? If it was a great in great demand, there'd be one in Dallas by now, and one in El Paso, and one in San Antonio. When we went to the Final Four, you and I'd sit down. We'd be like, yo, we going to get dinner tonight? You'd be like, yeah. Where you want to go? And I'd be like, I don't know. Maybe we check out Turkey Hut. But we never had that conversation.
Never. It did not happen.
It doesn't exist. So, like, it's just boo to turkey. It's dumb. Turkey's dumb.
Well, I'm thankful for you.
I'm thankful for you.
For this podcast. Thankful for the listeners. Hey, listen, for everyone that's listening to this on your commute, if you didn't get to it till Thanksgiving, sincere thank you. If you are able to reciprocate, please, please do rate and review. Give us a wonderful how about this? I'm going to put this on Parrish's proverbial plate. He didn't even offer it, but I'm going to say this right now. Sunday, Thanksgiving weekend, let's do two good Apple Podcast reviews. We know you can do it. When you're slipping away from the fam or your friends and you're watching some hoops or some football, just bring it up on the phone, bring it up on your computer, rate it 5 stars, leave us a quick comment why you're thankful, why you like the podcast. We love doing it for you. And again, we will have another episode coming for you on Friday. So whether you're at home, traveling back to wherever you need to be, we're going to have plenty of college hoops to talk for you. We got you covered.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. Antigua. He's a legend. Shouts to Arnell. Like Norlanda said, please go subscribe to Down College Basketball Podcast via Apple Podcast. Rate it favorably. 5 stars. Leave a nice comment. And yes, it's true. We're going to talk to you again on Friday. Till then, take care.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.